gentlemen, and thank you for coming to tonight's Comic Book Club. And now, here are your hosts, Pete LePage, Justin Tyler, and Alex Dalbert!
Comic Book Club. I'm Alex.
I'm Justin.
I'm Pete.
And that's our Bat of the Booth, Booth
Batman!
Thank you guys so much for coming out tonight. Very exciting show for you. Yeah. We're going to welcome our guests out in a second. But first, as many of you may or may not know, they are here in town, our guests tonight, for the Spider-Man Summit.
Right.
They're figuring out the next bunch of storylines for Amazing Spider-Man and all the ancillary titles.
Nice.
Pete.
Good word.
Good.
Thank you. I read a dictionary before. Very quickly, and I only got to A. Pete.
That's far I'm in.
Every single time we have had the Spider-Man people on has been very upset about a storyline that happened, I think, 50 years ago. Called One More Day. Now, here's the thing. Our guests left a Spider-Man dinner to come here and be on the show, are very gracious, so we're going to give them a little bit of a present, and Pete is not going to complain about One More Day.
We're going to give it a whirl, see what happens.
So you're going to be Banner the whole show, okay? No Hulk. Really hoping for big test here.
Yeah, well, we'll see what happens with that. Let's welcome our guests out.
Yeah,
ladies and gentlemen, Mark Waid and Steve Wacker. Thank you guys so much for coming on.
Well, after that sterling introduction about Mephisto.
I love you guys. Ran out, yet your shirts flared. Extreme shows.
What, that you're playing Mark's theme song?
Yeah.
So cool. Let's talk about Spider-Man. What's going on, you guys? You're in town for the Spider-Man Summit.
Yep.
And which number Spider-Man Summit at this point? How long?
This would be the fourth one. We first met in December 2006. Planning books that wouldn't be out till 2008. We met a couple times in 07, and one time in 08, I think, and now this one. Yeah.
So, you know, I think we talk about this every time you're on the show for the Spider-Man Summit, but what's changed?
Day.
What's what?
One more day.
You're poking a dinosaur right now.
I don't think that's a phrase.
And for the purposes, I think you know. Monster, would you?
Try safely.
There's many shows of yours I'm not happy with that I don't bring up.
Oh! That's to all of us.
Tip of the hat.
And I'm wagging a finger.
What's changed over time with the summits? What's grown? What's different in terms of putting together the title now as opposed to, say, a year ago?
We started with a smaller group. Originally, there were, I think, four altogether, but you know, the book comes out almost every week now, and it just requires a lot of time and commitment. So we've added Joe Kelly to the group, added Mark, we've added Fred Van Lente this time. So, and the hope is we'll have enough people and enough story that we can start pumping the book out even more often.
Wow.
So the
how many more days in a month are possible?
We do 36 issues a year right now, so I don't know how many weeks are in a year, but you could fill out
50 different.
How do you people not know the number 52?
As far as I know, it's 28 weeks in a year.
Wow, big change.
So the size has grown. This time, we've had a retreat. We look at sales numbers for a whole year, which are really strong. So we're able to approach it a little more confidently than we were. Like, are people even going to buy this book?
Thank you, President Obama.
Yeah. I mean, is that it? You know, there's certainly been a lot of discussion about the sales, I think, for the title, focusing on, you know, adding it together in different ways and various people using the numbers to be like, oh, it's a huge failure, and other people to be like, oh, it's a huge success. So how do you guys look at it? How do you guys break that down and judge how it's going sales-wise?
Well, what we just did this time is look at the numbers for all of 2008, which was before the Obama phenomenon issue. And, you know, the average was much higher than I think you'd expect looking at the online numbers. They're all top secret and confidential, but the numbers online, at least that I've seen, I don't know everywhere they go, but they're pretty low. So
they're just numbers.
Look, they're just numbers.
What, you know, what he can't
fuck
tell
numbers.
You, what he,
yeah,
exactly. What he can't tell you as an official representative of Marvel that I can tell you as a publisher is that at Boom Studios is that all of those numbers that you see online are really low ball because they're not taking into account a reorder activity, which is really strong. You're not taking into account subscriptions, not taking into account a bunch of different stuff. So I say dispassionately, and I would say this if I was writing Spider-Man books or not, my hand to God, that if I were looking at these numbers, these are really strong numbers,
right.
And I would be very happy with them. If they were Boom numbers, I'd be over the moon. So great.
you brought up the Obama thing. Actually, on the way over here, I saw a guy just literally in the middle of the sidewalk with a folding chair and five copies of the Obama Spider-Man.
That was me.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Wow. I didn't want to drop it.
That is so good that Howard Mackie can find work. That is
it's getting real.
We certainly talked a lot about what went into.
You don't want to step on Howard Mackie in this
room. I mean, oh.
This is a Howard Mackie room.
Yeah, Mackie built this.
We certainly talked a lot about when that issue came out, what went into it. There was a lot of discussion online, and you did the bulk of the issue, right?
Yes, I did the bulk of the royalties.
Yes. So what was the thought process there? I mean, even if it's a very obvious one, what was the idea? How did you come about putting that title together?
I was on my way out of town for my grandmother's funeral.
Wow.
Aww.
That's okay. She was suffering. That's good. And that's the end of that story.
All right, we get it. Okay, great numbers, though, right?
Near the end of the campaign, there was that article. I read it in the Telegraph, which is a UK paper that I read online.
Fancy.
I skimmed the story like I do, looking for my name, and it mentioned that Obama was a Spider-Man fan and a Conan fan. We had already had the Stephen Colbert running for president thing running in all of Marvel's books, and it was kind of a thing thrown out there by, I think it came through Joe from some people above him. Would it be funny, can we do something with this? We debated how to do it for a couple of days. We originally had it in, we were starting a new arc in 584, which is the first five-part. We thought, what a great way to launch that five-parter with, this backup story. I pointed out late one night, just so we're all on board with this, the story's called Character Assassination. Do we want the president on the cover? So, no, we didn't. We moved it, we had to move it back a week to the issue before. Then it became, we got to have this thing done in a week.
That was the president murder arc. Murder president?
There was no president. But it was a murder arc. It was the New York City mayoral election, right. All this stuff going on. But it wasn't, you can't put that story there.
Right.
And it also came out the week after the inauguration. So they said, can you get this together in a week? With the issue going out next week to go on sale the week of the inauguration. I said yes. And I was in the airport calling Phil Jimenez for the cover. Working it all out, of course, then all of a sudden, everyone at Marvel has an opinion on what the cover should look like.
Right.
I'm on the phone with Zeb Wells. I wrote Todd Knockin. Zeb was delivering me pages one by one. Like, never tell my grandfather this, but at the funeral.
Wow, on my iPhone. Read.
And
I don't know if you thought that, but that was the audience turning against you.
That's fine. The issue came out. Wow. My grandmother was a big Spider-Man fan and would have been happy. It all came together extremely fast.
And what's the idea there with Mark, with your story, to make it introductory, knowing that people were going to pick this up?
No, that story was done long ahead.
It was done long ahead of time. I happened to, catch the Obama train.
We were going to miss the window of the inauguration. We justified it looking backwards as, it's a nice one issue, done in one story, right. Kind of sets a lot of the pieces up on stage. It's a nice Peter Parker story. There's some Spider-Man in it. But really, it was just a celebration of the fact that a guy got elected who said he was a Spider-Man fan.
Yeah.
There wasn't anything, as far as I'm concerned, Spidey's apolitical.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it was really just a fun little story. Is that a hiss?
there's a
it's a bike
slow
tire.
Scrunchly.
Yeah.
I see. It's all those nitrogen tanks on the corners.
Yeah, we shut the doors and then let the gas go, so don't worry about it.
Just like Bastion. Awesome.
Let's talk about what's coming up in the title. So the next issue, Fred Van Lent. Then there's a two-issue thing by Dan Slott, and then you're writing the two issues after that.
Three issues after that. Yeah.
And tell us a little bit about that story, obviously.
That was an accident.
All right, the arc is called...
I'll get it later.
This is a great show
on the podcast.
Yeah.
To be honest, we usually do 45 minutes of physical comedy.
Slapstick on the radio. Is there anything better? 24/7 is the name of the story arc. It's by me and help me out here.
Mike McCone.
I know. and basically it's there's something that happens at the end of the previous issue which we can't talk about, which gives too much away, that spurs Spider-Man into thinking, you know what, I need to be, for the time being, I need to be Spider-Man 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, no Peter Parker. And what comes out of that? Not only his absence from his own personal cast, but the toll it takes on him psychologically. And in the meantime, a new Vulture shows up. And it's not the same 85-year-old man that Peter keeps punching in the face and sending to jail. It's a brand new Vulture who's a lot more vital and a lot more scary. And so he's got to deal with this on top of the 24/7 arc. So that's where we're going. And then after that, we've got Joe Kelly, right?
Yeah, then it's right into American Son with Pete dealing with the fact that Norman Osborn's in charge of the Marvel Universe. Norman's one of his greatest enemies. A lot of fun stuff with the Dark Avengers.
And who's drawing that?
That is Phil Jimenez
and
Paulo Sequeira.
Nice.
Cool. Yeah.
Quick back question for you. You mentioned that Fred Van Lent is sitting, Van Lente, is he going to be doing more stuff beyond the Spot issue?
Yeah, Fred's part of the, there aren't really boundaries, but we're calling him up. If the, Mark and Bob and Slott and Joe Kelly and Guggenheim are the web heads, then these guys are the web lieutenants.
Eventually we'll all be part of it, right?
Eventually, the hope is that you can all come to the retreat.
Right. we can go.
Good.
Mark your calendars. That's awesome.
What are you going to be a retreat?
Fred Van Lente and Zeb Wells are going to be there to help stock the year a little bit.
Right.
And Mark, to take a little sidestep from that, let's talk about Boom Studios.
Boom Studios.
Sure. And Boom Studios.
He's never said that word aloud.
It sounds very weird in my mouth. But let's talk about balancing that, writing other things for other publishers. How do you handle that?
There's 7 days in a week, dude. There's 18 hours in a waking day. There's plenty of time. I mean, actually, it's very difficult, but it's very rewarding work. I mean, I'm also the editor-in-chief of Boom Studios. And at this point, we publish 15 or 20 monthly books. I'm writing 3 books a month for Boom, as well as doing some occasional Spider-Man stuff and a little bit of stuff here and there. But writing Spider-Man is sort of the night and weekend job because I love it. And then Boom is something else I love, but that's the full-time, daytime job. And right now we've got... the big news this week is we have Incredibles ships tomorrow, Incredibles number 1.
Very feeble cheer.
And an artist named Marcio Takara. And then also tomorrow ships The Muppets number 1, which is by Roger Waters, which is great. It's phenomenal.
That's the best casting.
It's Roger Langridge doing The Muppets is just phenomenal casting. That guy's great. He was born to do this job. He was born with a hand up his ass, this guy.
He meant it as a compliment.
He should do the Muppets, that's what I mean. An ancillary hand up his ass. And then after that, then the following
that's a
week.
Callback.
That's
yeah,
a callback.
Nice.
And the following week is the one that we're really stoked about, which is, at this point, the highest-selling Boom book we've had so far, which is Irredeemable, number 1, which is my creator-owned series that I'm dealing with artist Peter Krause, with John Cassidy covers, and Gene Haw covers, and Barry Kitson did a cover, and...
Thank you
for that, yeah.
And what's the pitch on that title?
The pitch on Irredeemable is... what does it take to turn the world's greatest superhero into the world's greatest supervillain? What is that path? We are picking up in the here and now when he has already become the world's greatest supervillain. But at one time, he was like Superman and Jesus rolled into one. Like, the whole world believed in this guy. I know. Superman and Jesus. Awesome.
Great combo.
I know.
Was that ever a team up?
Brave and Bold Presents. It was yeah. Awesome.
Jesus was faster.
That's right.
Not so fast.
That's right. Who can forget the Superman Jesus race? That was the best.
What a metaphor.
So that's what that was.
The funny part is they did it on the beach and there were only one set of footprints.
So that's the pitch on the Redeemable. It's an ongoing series with me and artist Peter Krause, and it is basically, like I said, it is what, you know, a lot of it's set in the present day of he's a villain now, but a lot of flashbacks to what is the path. It's not a light switch. You don't just suddenly become a supervillain one day. He was revered.
It's the way it is.
Well, like, that's, yeah. And then what is that path? So if anything, it's my Sopranos of superheroes, if you will.
Wow.
It's like that sort of dark. Like,
so
I've read the first issue. The first issue is absolutely amazing. At least you changed everything.
I changed everything, but yeah, no. I know.
Unsolicited notes.
So just to sort of tie this up a little bit, give us something, obviously without spoiling anything, something that you're super excited about that's come out of this summit so far.
All right. I have two words for you, right?
Yes.
Big wheel.
Okay.
What are you insane? Who's the crackhead who applauded for Big Wheel?
What do you mean?
I got another word for you, Razorback. Ooh.
That's a compound word.
Wow. Ray and Zerback.
I think we're going to tie this up and move on with our first section, which we like to call the stack. Yeah. All right, well, let's keep talking about this. First thing that we are going to talk about.
Oh, nice.
What is that?
Desert
Comic Books.
Desert Hawk.
Comic Books. They're graphic storytelling.
All right.
Okay. This is not the room for sarcasm.
But what's Dengar Desert Hawk? Never heard of that before.
I have no idea.
Wait up.
Google image search.
You stumped Wade. I have no idea.
Yeah.
It's a British thing. Keep going.
All right. Well, we're going to talk about, you had two issues that came out. Amazing Spider-Man 588.
Two issues that came out.
Well, it's true. What are you?
Who knows?
It's on tag line.
All right, anyway, these things are here.
That'll be on the cover of one of these books.
These issues came out.
That's my stack.
I don't know if you've seen these.
I think you've probably seen them. So let's talk a little bit about ending up the character assassination arc. What went into that? How does Spidey end up in a different place than he was in the first?
Mark Guggenheim was handed the thankless job of wrapping up all of our first year subplots in five issues. It was a lot. He had a lot to maintain and get through. We had a serial killer arc running or the election, and we had some characters we needed to really make major status quo changes to, most notably the character of Lily Hollister, who's dating Harry Osborn, who Harry Osborn proposes to within this. Yeah. She ends up being a mystery villain named Menace, who's been haunting Spidey through the year. And at the end, she goes away with Norman Osborn, who's now in charge of the Marvel Universe. So that's setting, you know, a weird triangle, and you're not sure if it's romantic or what between Norman and Lily and Harry. We just released a cover where we find out that Menace is pregnant later in the year. But it's some pretty disgusting stuff. And I gotta say, Mark,
we'll explain to you what goes into that.
When a man loves a supervillain.
Wait, supervillains don't use birth control? What the hell?
That's why they're evil. Anyone that uses birth control is evil.
They're wet. Let's not make this weird.
Condom, man.
Too late.
Wow. If you had ever gotten laid, I would worry about that statement.
Hey, 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 just
thinking of your name. Hey, I've had the same all my life. I've never had a reading like that.
did you feel any concern in tying up everything at the end of the year with a nice bow like that?
Yeah.
Cool.
But to Mark's credit, this was not an easy story to crack. And Guggenheim is one of the most easy guys in the business to deal with in terms of he'll write something out, he'll get it all out, we'll take a look at it, and he'll realize, you know what, this doesn't work, let me start over from square one. And he had to do that with this story. Like the pieces were so difficult to fit together because he's writing parts of other people's stories too. And with all this Spidey stuff, there's five people to answer to. It's a hard book to work on. And I thought Mark did a real banger job. And Johnny Jr.'s art throughout this with Klaus and Dean, I mean, he can't beat this stuff. And Barry Kitson came in to the story of how Lily became Menace. I'm pretty proud of this.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm glad there's no Obama story in this trade.
That asshole.
This is great.
Too soon.
I mean, for those of you who...
Too soon.
It's really excellent. The thing that I appreciated the most was how well the two issues work together to tell a full story.
Oh, yeah, because in this one there's the epilogue.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Coda.
Yes.
The coda.
It's a musical term.
Now, I want to talk about the fact that a lot of people take shots at you in the Spider-Man books, like, eat it, Whacker, like little side notes in the comic. It seems
is that
like
just stuff you're writing.
Yeah, you write that in.
No.
He doesn't see a lot.
Yeah, I don't read your copy.
Weird.
He threw it through your window attached to a brick.
Yeah.
So
here's what I didn't know about comics when I started: that the editor's notes would always say, like, editor, you know, read Spidey 54 for more details.
Yeah, yeah.
Editor. They're written by the writers.
Yeah.
And the writers tend to.
What?
Use that to mock me generally.
Right.
And I, you know, I have a funny last name, so what can I do?
It's, it's enjoyable. It's enjoyable to be reading along and then someone to be like, suck it, Steve. You know, it's like, oh,
I'm glad that appeals to you.
Yeah. you don't laugh when you're
reading? See the theatrical version, and during the rest of the show, someone can yell out, suck it, Pete.
You've been to one of our shows.
Yeah, that's good. That's what we do.
Cool. Half of the writers on the book don't really like me that much, so I've come to peace with.
No, really?
Yeah. Oh, it's fine.
I thought it was...
Wait.
This is getting very serious. So we're going to move on and talk about something we can all rip on, which is Azrael gets Dark Knight. Of course, following up on the Smurfs, which is very exciting.
No, it's well written. It's beautifully illustrated.
Yeah.
Wow.
What is your guys?
Oh, Fraser Irving.
Are you a fan of the character at all?
I mean, yes.
My editor in chief created him, so yes.
Real, that's right. That's right.
Joe
Q designed the character, so there'd be a flashback. So,
what did you guys think about this book?
Pretty bad. It was just, you know, it was a lot leading up to him putting on the outfit and then getting stabbed immediately.
Yeah.
I was like, whoa, it's a good thing you had that on.
Really climax when he puts that outfit on.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's a little tough to get a handle on what the idea of the series or where it is.
Well, it's very weird. The original Azrael was a guy from this religious... was a cat. That later was spun out into this human who worked for this religious cult and became Batman. And this is like a totally, it's like, oh, there's this other religious cult that's also evil that has this other guy who's also evil. So it's like, why didn't they just use the first
one? Yeah, I don't know. Didn't the first guy die at the end of the Azrael series originally? Doesn't he die?
I think he does, because they mention it here, like, he might be dead. But it makes it seem like, well, I bet we'll see him in a couple issues.
Yeah, I don't know. It just feels non-essential to me.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. The top of the cover says Battle for the Cowl, which means essential.
Oh, okay. Fair point.
So, maybe you should
read it. Would you say pick it up?
Not very good.
Nope. Cool. All right, let's move on and talk about Church of Hell, number one.
Look at that cover.
Yes.
Oh.
This is actually written by Alan Grant, who you might remember from Jurassic Park. So that's pretty cool. What did you guys think about this issue? Pete, you picked it up.
It was horrible.
Oh my God, what am I looking at?
Yeah. What's the elevator pitch? What's the high concept?
It's a guy that goes to a church of hell.
Church of hell. Yeah. It's all right here. It sounds like your first album.
Mark Waid's Church of Hell.
Yeah. I'd rather read that. Basically, a guy has a horrible face, and he's like, "Oh, if you only knew how I have this horrible face." And then he flashes back to, I guess, the beginning of the story of why he has a horrible face, which is he lied about cheating on his wife and then knocked a guy off of a balcony and then ended up in a church of hell. And that's where we end the story, is he has entered a church of hell.
Church of hell.
The thing I get about the story is the woman, or the guy, has sex with a woman, which I don't understand. I've never done. So I felt really disconnected with that whole thing.
That is weird.
That's super weird. I actually didn't mind it. I thought this was all right.
Really?
Yeah. The guy, he has a bad day, kills a guy.
Happens.
I mean, I think we've all accidentally knocked someone to their death. And then,
what time is it now?
Yeah. And then he runs away and gets in trouble, and then he wanders into a church of hell.
Wow.
Church of hell. Yeah, be for me, church of hell.
This is one of those things that you look at the cover and read the title, and you're either like, I want to read that, or you don't.
Right. Or you're Pete, where you're like, I don't care.
It's not one more day, so yeah. It's probably great.
Impression, that's an impression.
That's actually a pretty good impression.
No, in fact, Steve Wacker is a classically trained actor. And so he can do that stuff.
Yeah. Alan Grant, though.
Wow.
Alan Grant, classic Batman writer.
Yeah. Yeah,
really? No, it's the guy from Jurassic Park.
The character from Jurassic Park. Oh, what?
Big Jurassic Park.
I'm so confused. Is this Alan Grant or not?
It's their show, humor them.
You know!
Let's vlog. Talk about X-Force number 13.
Okay.
Well, a lot of stuff happens in this issue. This is a prelude to the Messiah War.
Suicide leper.
Yeah.
Everything is so vile.
Yeah.
Church of blood, everything. Suicide leper.
Everything in this issue is just like hardcore, extreme, over the top.
Yeah.
To the point of, I'm getting to a spoiler for the last page for you guys. This is the thing that I wanted to talk about. The deal is that the leper queen or whatever has a bunch of mutants, is injecting mutants with a formula that makes them go nuts and essentially explode whatever their powers are, killing humans. There's a pretty classic page layout going on in the second to last page where she has a gun pointed at Boom Boom's head.
Boom Boom. There's that word again.
Boom Boom's head, and then she says, "I'm sorry, I'm going to have to kill you." You get a panel of blam, and then you figure you're going to turn the page, and there'll be something entirely different. But you turn the page, and there's a full page splash of Boom Boom dead on the floor, shot through the head.
Right.
Now, the thing for me
is, if you like female characters, pick up the Wonder Woman.
This sort of struck me as, you know, a lot of people are like, they kill off, you know, D-list characters or whatever very easily. But I think this is the first character that I was like, what? I can't believe, I got really upset about this. I got very, very upset about this. And it made me realize that every, you know, D-list character that you kill off is important to somebody.
You know what you should do?
Yeah.
You post on the internet.
I think that's a good
idea. A lot of times it gets the writers to change the character.
It does. It totally does.
Have you ever killed a character that you regretted doing?
All the time.
Yeah.
You mean in real life or like?
No,
those hookers won't kill themselves. I'm just saying. So.
Whoa, there's something we can take out of the podcast.
Yeah.
Now they have an edit to make.
Ice. I made the mistake of killing Ice. It was my idea to kill
Justice League.
Justice League. Yeah, character. And it was my call. And it was a really bad call. So. Wow. You never, like, don't kill it. Like, here's a lesson, for instance. Like, when we decided to do a new Vulture in Amazing Spider-Man, collectively in the room, our first thought was, well, the first thing he does is he kills the old Vulture. And I'm like, you know what? That, if for some reason people don't respond to the new Vulture, we're screwed. So maybe we should try this time not to kill the old Vulture and see if the new one takes, you know. So before you just willy-nilly just knock off existing characters who have been around for longer than you've been in the business, you know.
It just about. It feels like often an easy way of amping up the danger. Yeah. And there's always, I think, some way around that, some way of amping up the danger without just killing a character.
The trick is, I'm going to put in a plug for Irredeemable again. I'm just saying. So the trick is not falling prey to the easy way of substituting violence for evil. There are two different things, and there's no act so violent in comics that we haven't seen it 9 times already. So the trick is try to find something that is chilling and evil, and yet not as simple as a gun to the head. Although I haven't read the story, I don't know. I mean, it may have been the perfect ending to that story. I'm just saying.
It's a good story.
It's only part two, most.
Oh, okay.
So there's more to come.
Yeah.
But it's a great story, and I think this was kind of this series is like extreme. A lot of extreme things happen. That's just another guess.
Somebody was so angry that you said evil is not violence that they left.
To commit violence, I suppose. So, yeah.
Someone disagreed so strongly. And Pete left.
Oh, man.
Well, something I remember, correct me if I'm wrong, but you got pretty upset about was killing off Bart Allen, right?
Oh, man. But I'm still mad. I still go to bed mad every night. Yes. Yeah. You just, look, to some degree, it's karmic retribution for the stupid things I've done, like killing Ice. But still, it's the idea is that if the easiest thing to do in comics is to just put a gun to somebody's head or whatever, and just, I'm not, again, this sounds like I'm ragging on X-Force. I haven't read the comic. It may be great. I don't know. But putting a gun to somebody's head and pulling the trigger is the easiest way out. And it seems to me like these characters, if you don't like the character, if you don't think it's working, just shut them off for 6 months. Just right. Let it lay fallow for a while. You remember the Hulk? This is my favorite example. The Hulk lasted 6 issues in 1962, didn't sell, and then just vanished because the book didn't sell. They didn't just decide in the last issue, oh, it's not working, we may as well kill Bruce Banner. And if they had, the whole course of Marvel Comics would have changed forever. Instead, they just said, it's not working, let's put it on the shelf for a little while, and maybe his time will come at some point, and maybe it won't. And I think history will back me up when I say, I think the Hulk's time came.
It'd be a different industry if every time sales slipped, the character was like, I'll do it. I'll kill myself.
Or it would be DC Comics, one of the two.
Oh!
This is a good point to move on talking about one of you. Let's talk about Potter's Field, Stone Cold.
Yes, let's.
All right. Well, tell us a little bit about the series. I mean, this is a one-shot.
It's the one-shot that comes off of the 3-issue mini that we did last year.
Which was really good.
Thank you.
Yeah.
And the basic concept is, and it's true, there's a place on, called Ellis, Potter's Field, which is just off of, it's Hart Island, which is in the river. And it's basically where the city of New York buries its John Doe's. It's the bodies that it can't identify by name. And my detective in Potter's Field is a guy who we know very little about, but he's decided his mission is to go through that graveyard and put a name on every tombstone, no matter how long it takes.
Any name?
Any name. Your name is on half the tombstones.
See? So, series over.
It's a detective procedural, but it's like, you know, finding out who the real person is here. Jason Macho. I am.
Wait, what's that?
They're having a thing.
There's some friends of mine as tombstones in there.
Oh.
So, so the idea is, you know, it's a detective procedural. It's who is this person in this grave that has done, you know, and what was their story and what was their bad, what killed them, what injustice is left to solve that I have to finish out. So, and he's got the shadow. He has sort of a network of operatives throughout the city. There's the coroner who owes him a favor. There's the newspaper writer who owes him a favor.
I have a coroner that owes me a favor.
I'm sure you do. Yeah. So that's the story. It's done with an artist named Paul Azaceta, who is brilliant.
That's great.
His work is great
stuff.
Yeah. So this is a one shot coming off that, and then we're doing a hardcover collection of the whole thing next month.
And then Is there going to be more?
There will be more. It's really just trying to find a place in Paul as a set of schedule to do it. I mean, I could write more, but I really want Paul to do this stuff.
Yeah. Yeah.
But enough about how I feel about the book.
I've really enjoyed it, and I like it's a very interesting starting point with starting with the cemetery, kind of like starting with the end and working backwards.
Thanks.
It's got like a really creepy coolness to it. But I've. My only complaint is I want more.
You know, cool. I mean,
did you read the original miniseries?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. There'll be more. There will be more. That's a good complaint. I can live with that complaint.
Yeah.
You?
What? I liked it too. You? Why do you think I'm a jerk?
Well,
you tie wearing. You tie wearing. You used to all wear ties, and then I don't know what happened.
No, never happened. Only jerks wear ties.
Yeah. Oh, sorry. I gotta be like the cool captain. What's going on?
This is clearly not the cool captain.
I do like it. I like, because you have your police procedural, but it does have this overarching goal,
right,
which is nice. It'd be nice if that, like, this would be a television show.
We've been talking with some people, and again, but if it's only a comic for the rest of its existence, I'm fine with that. It would be great if it were a TV show at some point, but it's about the comics first.
This is in particular, I think, very nice done in one issue, and Paul, as I said, does a nice job with the layouts.
Yeah.
I think. Just doing things that can only be in comics,
yeah.
I think, which is great about it. So, thank you.
There you go. There you go. All right. Awesome.
Yes.
Are you happy?
Pick that up. I'm happy now.
Yes, cool.
Okay, we're going to be editing that.
All right, now, last thing we're going to talk about is Invincible number 60, which has the entire Invincible War crossover in one issue. What did you guys think about this?
There's another gate there on those four.
No, it's at four. It's really nice.
Yeah.
So.
That was not cheap.
Yeah. I was excited with all the people that were going to be working on it and the fact that it was going to be a really big issue. I liked how they, for each couple of pages, different panels, different kind of layouts, so they kept that fresh. I was just upset with the actual story a little bit. I felt like it fell short a little bit because they've been building this issue up for a long time. And the issue before that was very upsetting, especially to me. But
especially me?
Yeah, you guys thought it was all right, but I thought it was pretty lame. But I was hoping that this 60 was going to be like a really kind of like great jumping on to like... I mean, a lot happened, and the last panel I liked, like, okay, we got to deal with the after effect, but...
Which is just for those of you who haven't read it, there's a bunch of alternate universe Invincibles that are attacking Earth and essentially almost completely destroy it while every single superhero in any Image comic tries to stop them.
I know a lot of people have been wondering what the Pit has been doing for all these years. He's here, he's in here, he's opening someone's face.
I thought this was fun. You know, the thing is, I agree with you that as a story, it was okay. But the thing that I really like about it, and this is the thing that I think I liked about the last issue that you guys did not like, is that I feel like Robert Kirkman is trying things with the book. He's trying different formats every issue.
Sure.
And that's cool, and that's fun, and I like reading a comic book like that that's not the same thing every single issue. It's not the same layout. It's not the same type of story.
Yeah.
Well, I don't have any problem with him trying different things. It's just that
when it doesn't work at all.
Yeah, make them better.
Yeah. Well, I just felt like the last issue was kind of a weird thing where, you know, you're like, oh, trying to see it from his point of view.
A supervillain.
Yeah, it's this asshole guy who has a wife and kids and then gets his wife and kids killed. And it's like, oh, great. Nice job.
Yeah, well,
he was trying
not to bring anything up, but you have a problem with when things happen to people's lives.
See? I'm trying to be cool, and you're bringing this shit up.
A lot of emotions on this.
Wow.
A lot of emotions. Well, the thing is, he tries new things, but like that last issue was like, from a supervillain's point of view, I think we've all seen that. And so it's like, it's not a new thing. He's trying on something, and he's like, new maybe to him. And this, he's like jamming a crossover into this one issue, and it seems just comes off as really rushed. Especially when this, like, totally kills a bunch of characters.
Yeah.
And there are hundreds of characters, like, I don't read the Savage Dragon. Sure. I don't read Astounding Wolfman. I don't read Savage Dragon. Why do we... We don't need to see all these characters unless you're... Like, Shadowhawk? Who's reading Shadowhawk? And, why do... These characters don't need to be in
it.
And they're going to leave next issue. It's not like they're going to be hanging around.
Yes, it's Jack Staff.
Yeah.
Jack Staff.
Jack Staff's great.
Spawn's in here.
Yep.
Yeah.
I don't know. I thought it was fun. Would you say pick it up?
I would say check it out.
It's not what I asked.
Come by the red table after the show.
Just, we'll be hanging out here reading our comics.
Yeah,
cool. And that's it for the staff. All right, it is time for our next section, which is my favorite section because you guys make it up. It's your audience questions, and for that, we're going to bring out Booth Man.
Wow.
And for those of you who are new to the show, Booth Man lives in the booth.
Yeah.
Yay. The end.
Yay. So let's get some of those questions that I keep hearing about.
Just want to say, every single question was great. It was really hard to pick.
Oh, okay. Sure. Everyone. Pandering.
Yeah. Why are you so handsome, Steve Wacker?
Well, how do you answer that question, Steve Wacker?
Yeah, how do you answer that question?
All right, so the first question is, who's a more compelling character, Spider-Man or Superman, and why?
Oh,
that's a big one.
I'll answer that, Mark. You've written them both.
Spider-Man is a more compelling character. I think Superman is a better character.
You're saying to write?
And to write, yes. Because there's just... Superman's... In order to get to Superman, you have to go through his heart. I mean, in order to get Superman, there's only certain things you can do to Superman. There's any number of... the beauty of writing Peter Parker and Spider-Man is that every bad thing that happens to us on a daily basis is the kind of thing you can import into Spider-Man's world that will affect him in a way that it would never affect Clark Kent or Superman.
At every Spidey retreat so far, we've gotten us to a story where we broke it down, and we've worked so hard to give Spidey, a win at the end, and we always reach a point where we're like, "Oh wait,
yeah,
he can lose that battle."
Yes,
it's a Spider-Man story,
right?
And he walks away thinking, "Ah, boy, being Spider-Man's tough."
Yeah,
Superman, you can't do that so much. Like, he's got to save, he's got to save that world.
Yeah.
That's interesting. Also, to take the story, the 24/7 story, yeah. If Superman were Superman for 24 hours, seven days a week, it'd be like, good, that's his job.
Yeah.
When Spider-Man, it's like, oh man, that's hard.
Yeah.
Why do you say, though, that Superman is a better character?
He's more... Part of it is because without him, none of these other characters exist. I mean, that's part of my feeling. He's just such a golden age foundation to all these characters that without Superman, you might not have had any of the superheroes that follow.
Is Spider-Man the most definitive reaction to Superman?
Question.
Probably. This is what an editor does. He pokes.
Probably because Spider-Man, because Superman, at least at that point in his career, was a one-dimensional character. And what Stan Lee's gift was to, and this sounds like a backhanded compliment, it's not, is to take one-dimensional characters and make them two-dimensional. I don't mean that to be snotty. Like, it's really
no,
like, it worked, but that's true.
It is true.
Because the beauty of Spider-Man is he has problems that we all care about, and nobody loves Superman in the world more than I do. But even I understand that the difference between, like, Spider-Man's problems are, how do I get my medication to Aunt May, which is stuff we can all relate to. Superman's problems are, how do I enlarge the bottle city of Kandor? It's really not anything that we can relate
to. It's a much smaller percentage of us.
Exactly.
Not in this room, but...
Maybe.
If you ask that question, raise your hand. Pete's going to bring you a gift, and let's get the next question.
If Jubilee could shoot something other than fireworks out of her hands, what would you suggest?
Wait, what? What did she shoot out of her hands?
Fireworks.
I'm going to go with fingers. Fingers.
She
out of her
a shot?
That'd be really cool.
Huh?
She only got shot?
Boom.
There's a difference.
Yeah.
Wow. Watch yourself.
Says the editor.
Yeah.
I don't edit that.
Editors ask questions.
They poke.
That's damn true.
I don't know. Pete, any idea there?
I was giving off a gift. I didn't hear what happened.
What should Jubilee shoot out of her hands other than fireworks?
Wow. Hard question.
A sense of humor? I don't know.
Sense of humor?
Exactly my point.
I think it's weird that Jubilee shoots sparks out through her rubber gloves. She always wears rubber gloves.
That's your problem?
Every time I see her, she always has these giant yellow like rubber gloves. I'm like, sparks wouldn't go through those.
Wow.
I just read back to Superman. I read a Superman story of the weekend of my kid where Superman, in 8 pages, gets a new power.
Yeah.
4 pages, you don't know what that new power is. Page 5, you find out the power is to shoot tiny Supermans out of his hand. And the little Superman's solve thing. And he is so frustrated by this power, he just kills that little Superman with kryptonite.
True.
And says, oh, thank God. Yep. I don't have to deal with that little Superman anymore.
Yeah, this is an old story.
This is a pretty old story.
And the thing
what
was,
a
he was like,
up story.
He had, know,
Spider-Man's a better character.
Wow. Nailed it.
So basically,
she should shoot out Superman's out of her hand.
Yeah. Cool. Raise your hand if you've asked a question. Pete's going to bring you a party beer. Yes. Next question. I don't know.
Will Mark write LSH again? I loved your run on that.
Who are you? Who? Show your hand. See, if you're a girl, I'd kiss you. But that is awesome. What a great question. Thank you. I will probably never write Legion of Superheroes again because, as we've learned with Flash, never go back. It will ruin you. I don't know. I think that
you have a twisted history with that team, though.
I have a very. I've watched that team like twice, and it's. And the thing is, it's neither of the teams that are going to be at the end of Legion of Three Worlds are those teams. So if you said to me, here's Superboy, by the way, you can make it like it was in the 60s, I would have been all over that like black on a bowling ball. But that wasn't really...
Is that a phrase? Poking a dinosaur?
Is
not
it is. Yeah. I'd be a writer.
This is writing?
Oh, but thank you for your question. It's very nice of you to say. I'm glad you enjoyed the run. I wrote it specifically for people who didn't read Legion of Superheroes but wanted to read Legion of Superheroes.
I've always loved Legionnaires, all that, and I like to run as well. And I feel really especially sad that they totally went back on pretty much everything.
Yes. Right after the moment I left the book, it's like you leave the room and then a meteor falls on it. Yep.
Now, what's that? I mean, that happens with some regularity in comics. Is that just a new writer coming in and saying, well, I have to put my mark on this title?
Yeah.
Cool.
Well, you kind of know, almost always, doing any, try to do any new take, it's going to eventually go back to the classic take.
Right.
I learned that on Legion. And, you know, now I've experienced a little bit with Spider-Man, some of the stuff we've done. It's always going to go back to that classic, classic mode. That's the way the pendulum swings.
You can't move Fantastic Four out of the Baxter Building because you know that eventually they're going to move back. You can't move Spider-Man... You know, you can't have him become a different thing than a photojournalist because eventually he's going to be a photo. Like, everybody just knows. It's going
to
be back.
True, but you have to move him away. Otherwise, he's just...
I agree.
I know, but the trick is finding a way to do it in a way that is at least buys the illusion that you're having some change.
And once in a while, you can hit upon a thing that works for a long time. Peter David on Hulk for 15 years wasn't the classic Hulk that we all know.
Right.
And then once we got there, it was kind of a breath of fresh air to have Hulk destroying shit. We hadn't seen that in so long.
Right. But
for 15 years, it was constantly a new status quo in that book.
Like Spider-Man was married for a long time. Eventually,
I was
have to move
sitting
back.
Here going, you know what? They're going to not... Talk about it.
And to save a woman's life, he gave up that marriage.
I know.
Is there
what a
more
great story.
That's bullshit.
Ancillary.
Hey, we got another question?
Nope, that's it for your last question.
There's me, B.
And we are going to move on with our next section, which we like to call the Week in Geek.
Yeah!
So hard to work. First thing we are going to talk about.
What book is that from, Mark?
That's from Superman 123. Who doesn't know that? What do they teach you in college?
Not about comic books. First thing we're going to talk about is Last Night's Heroes. Unfortunately, Heroes was not on last week. Such a shame.
Thank God.
But last night, this makes me really feel very weird to say out loud. Heroes broke new ground by having a good episode.
Yeah.
Wow.
I know. I felt totally weird the entire time.
Was it the Brian Fuller episode?
Yeah, it was Brian Fuller. And that's exactly the reason it was good. He wrote the only other ever good episode of the show, which was Company Man from the first season.
Yeah. Wow, you are hard. The only good episode of the entire series.
That I hate that show so much.
Wow.
And every week he talks about it.
It's the cross the audience bears by coming up.
That's true.
But this episode
that show
was
your wife.
What? I'm seeing other shows.
You don't. Great setup, man.
This was beyond being well written. It was actually, it felt like everybody on the show took the script and took everything to the next level, where it was better filmed, it was better acted across the board. Everything about this particular episode was better. What did you guys think?
I agree. It was really good, and I will admit I haven't even been watching a lot of them this season because they're so bad. But this one, even the end, which I was like, Peter Petrelli walks forward and he's like, what do we do now or something? And I'm like, oh no, here comes some suck. And then it pulls out and he's in the Statue of Liberty. I was like, this seems lame, but why do I like it? And I still don't know.
Yeah.
Like, why did I like that?
I don't know, because they made everything that was lame about the show for the past 2.5 seasons or whatever totally cool again. It was very.
It was strange. Actually kind of touching when
there were,
Matt Parkman's girlfriend slash wife. I don't know. Which, did they get married?
Did he slash her?
Who in the audience knows? Girlfriend or wife? Who knows?
Wife.
All right, so girlfriend.
Yeah. she dies in this really like smartly written way. It was great. Yes.
I mean, the all the talk about the crying was a little much. I felt like we didn't need to. There was that one back and forth with Hero and his sidekick. There.
Oh, you can't watch the Hero stuff. You can't watch the Hero and.
Yeah, that whole.
Even that was not terrible, though.
He's like, don't make me cry. Well, you're going to make me cry. Well, if you cry, then I'm going to cry, then the baby's going to start crying.
You guys were having the exact same conversation backstage.
Yeah, but we're
a liar.
But it was. That was really the only thing where I was like, usually it's this, and then it snowballs into terrible. But there was. I did think it was weird they were in the Statue of Liberty, and the CG looked pretty bad. I was like, really? They couldn't get anything better than that for looking
at
the
top? They
couldn't
get the actual Statue of Liberty.
Well, I can understand that, but I mean, it was just like, they just did black shading behind them. They're like, no, we're in the Statue of Liberty. No one's allowed up there, so they won't know that that's not it. I was like,
do you guys think it can, in any sense, maintain being good?
You can hope. Hopefully this is the first step, and they're just going to crawl back out and start doing great shows again.
How hard is it to be good?
Guys?
Yeah, anybody?
Okay, we don't know. All right, let's move on to the next topic, which is Spider-Man 4. There's been a lot of non-news about this in the news. Just people talking about who the villains are, what's going on with it. You guys were probably, you mentioned you were talking about Spider-Man 4, Spider-Man Musical a little bit at the summit.
We were planning it all out.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. So you got the whole plot.
You got the song.
It ties in with One More Day.
Great idea.
Excellent.
Great song title.
Yep.
One more day.
Cool. There's obviously been a lot of working together. I've apparently lost my facility for words since the beginning of the show. But
boom.
There's been a lot of... Marvel and Marvel Studios have occasionally been working together, like Joe Quesada and Bendis going in and talking about Thor, other people going in and talking about Iron Man 2. It's a different process with Spider-Man because that's a Sony movie.
Yeah, there's a different vibe between Marvel and Sony. They're kind of doing their thing. We don't have to, you know, they've got their own thing. They check in with us. You know, it's not like we're going in different directions or anything, but they pretty much run their own thing. The musical, on the other hand, has been a part of, you know, some of the things at least Joe's been a part of. You know, Joe's, I think, heard some of the music. He's read the script and stuff, and that's, you know, they've been checking in with.
What do you know about it?
It's all the Joshua Tree, and it's a Spider-Man thing.
Spider-Man Joshua Tree. Awesome.
Do you think around the time the musical comes out, are we going to be seeing more musical elements in the comic book?
Oh, I wish. I wish I could do that.
You could open it up, and it could be one of those.
There are people here who can vouch for the fact that all I do is sing the titles of our book.
That's true. It's absolutely true. So a little sound chip with Steve, just singing the dialogue.
I would pay literally 50 cents more.
Wow. Literally.
No exaggeration, you guys.
Done.
And
that's in your pocket.
Who would you like to see as the villains for Spider-Man 4?
Spider-Man 4?
Yeah.
I
think I'm Sandman?
Yeah.
Man, you can't find John to see this in the 28 weeks of the year. That's a call.
Yeah, score.
I learned a life lesson. I don't know. The comedian?
That's a take away the movie.
Like Ian McShane. Can he play anybody?
Well, Ian McShane, to be fair, he'd be a good Kraven, right?
Kraven! That's perfect!
That's
what I've heard.
Ian McShane. Ian McShane.
Remember, you have air first. Ian McShane is Kraven. That's
great.
Awesome.
Wow. Yeah, well, he is going to be too.
Don't be satisfied with anything else.
That's great.
That is good.
Oh, like, he's got crazy. Like, he's going to be on the air in another 2 weeks. Yeah. Come on.
That's just
I'm
so good.
I'm coming down for my whiskey sour, but that is a good
idea.
All right, and that's it for the Week in Geek. All right, there's time for the next section, which is trivia. And for that, we turn it over to Mr. Pete LePage.
Mr. Pete LePage.
This is the part where we give back to you, the lovely audience. Thank you so much for showing up. It's an opportunity to win $25 free in the form of a gift card to Midtown Comics. Who would like a chance to win $25 free? Simply raise your hand. Yes, guy doing the maybe fixing my hair, maybe yeah. Come on down. What's your name?
I'm Steve.
Steve, audience? Audience Steve.
Hey Steve.
Hey guys.
Alright, Steve, how this is gonna work is I have three questions. You're gonna listen to each question, then listen to all three possible answers. Go 3 for 3, gift card yours. Today's trivia is about Spider-Man.
Okay.
Do we let him?
Yeah. No.
He's got all the help he needs.
Yeah, trust me, you won't need it. All right, here we go. Thank you, Booth Man. The three most infamous and dangerous enemies of Spider-Man are Green Goblin, Doc Ock, and is it A, Sandman, B, Venom, or C, Sigourney Weaver? So it's either A, Sandman, or B, Venom.
I'm going to go with B.
Correct! All right! 1 for 1. All right, don't get cocky. Stay focused. All right.
It's too late. I'm cocky.
Oh, boy. One of the only changes made to Spidey's backstory was A. I'm sticking true to my promise here, all right? A, his level of genius. B, his level of spider sense. Or C, his level of armpit webbing. So it's either A, his level of genius, or B, his level of genius.
I think it's A.
A is correct. A is correct.
Wait. I'm throwing a flag on the play. Wait. What? Really?
Yeah.
Because his armpit webbing has changed radically over the years.
Yeah, that's true, but that's not...
Sometimes big, sometimes small.
That's true. But as far as backstory, like, when he was first made, he wasn't as smart as he is now.
Really?
Yeah.
He was smart to stand under a radioactive spider? Okay, I'm saying. Many would call that stupid.
Okay.
You spend your Saturday nights, but all right.
Here we go.
Radiant.
The last question. Spidey got in trouble with the comic book code over... A, sex. B, drugs. Or C, the use of the salad fork.
I think it's B, drugs.
Oh, wow! Nice work! Congratulations, you have $25 free.
Unbelievable.
Wow. I'm very proud of you. I really thought you were going to sneak in
something. I thought about it. There was a couple opportunities, but I took the high road.
Guys, as we all know, tomorrow is New Comic Book Day. We recommend you go to Midtown Comics because they've been nice enough to sponsor this show. What are you guys looking forward to, Pete?
I'm going to say Hackslash.
Okay, no surprise there. Cool. I'm going to say X Infernus is coming out, but also Umbrella Academy. Both.
Yes!
Nice. It's only one. U.S.
We never followed that rule.
Cool. I'm going to say Jack of Fables. I love Jack of Fables. It's a really fun title, really enjoyable, and it's been very good right now. I believe this issue is kicking off the Great Fables crossover, which should be a lot of fun.
Yeah.
I'm going to say War of the Time Forgot. I'm just kidding. I'm going to say I'm going to be self-serving and say Incredibles number one.
Yeah. Nice. And what else should people look forward to coming out from you?
As well as that, you've got Muppets number one coming out next week.
And anything in the future?
In the near future, like Irredeemable coming out the week after? Yes, Irredeemable comes out the week after.
Are you bullying Alex right now?
No, he's pumping me for information. You can't see this on the web, but it's true. And then we haven't even talked about The Unknown, but we'll talk about that soon.
Okay.
All right. Nice. And you, sir, what are you looking forward to?
Tomorrow, apparently, Madame Xanadu comes out.
Yes.
Terrific.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Can you read that?
She's really good.
Yes. Yeah. That's been a great book. I'm looking forward to Spidey 589 tomorrow, too. Return of the Spot, Fred Van Lente's first foray.
Yeah.
And plug something that people... can really look forward to coming up in Spider-Man Beyond tomorrow's issue.
Just leave out any dead relatives of yours.
Story.
Oh!
What's that?
Can we say there's a wedding?
There is a there is a wedding coming up in 600.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Ah, American, interesting.
An American Son coming up just before like five parters with Spidey versus Norman Osborn.
Very cool.
Wow. All right. And Spidey 600.
Yeah.
Which has the wedding 104 pages. No reprints or fucking Marvel handbook pages.
Yeah.
Wow. I'm the fun. The handbook pages, but when they fill out the your comic that you're paying $5 for with 30
handbook
pages.
No good. Yeah.
Yeah, well, I'll definitely look forward to that.
That sets me off.
Wow. Before we go, a couple of little things. Next week, we are going to have a big show for you guys. We are celebrating Marvel Assistant Editors Week. Alejandro Albano, I'm going to pronounce this wrong, I'm really sorry guys, Tom Brennan, Daniel Ketchum, Lauren Sankovic, and Jordan D. White all on
Jordan!
The show. Justin is going to be in Alaska.
Yeah!
Also, you can check us out almost every day of the week at youtube.com/comicbookclub, so please do that. A couple of people we want to thank before we go, and we want to thank Mark from In Other Show! We're here every Tuesday night at 8 p.m. Please tell your friends. Good night!
Good night!
Comic Book Club is recorded in front of a live audience every Tuesday night at 8 p.m. at the People's Improv Theater in New York City. To find out more info or to listen to additional episodes, go to popcultureshock.com/cbclub. 1, 2, 3.